see how attached you can get to things? You can get attached to things like the theme song. Like a voice coming on at a certain time. Like a moment in between. Our attachments are funny. Today, I want to explore this whole concept of attachments. The way we attach. How we attach. It's actually our attitude towards attachment. And it comes up from another article that was written in a science magazine recently. Crazy attachments. Now, this is based on the work of someone named Mary Salter Ainsworth. Mary Salter Ainsworth did a study many years ago, 1970s, where she developed a procedure called a strange situation. And in this strange situation, she tested different relationships between caregivers and children. Based on that work, some other psychologists said, is this the way we are in our grown-up way of being? So let's describe the situation in the studio with me, Linda Vanella. Linda, what was the setting?
Thank you, Armand. The setting was that she had observed children between 12 months and 18 months. And in observing them, she watched how the relationship between them and their mother progressed or changed when the mother left the room and returned to the child, whether the child was receptive to the mother upon the return, whether the child clung to the mother, or if the child was receptive to other strangers in the room while the mother left. And in so doing, she was able to come up with different theories as to what occurred in the attachment of the child to the mother.
So it was called a strange situation because she created a strange room.
Correct.
And she invited people to come to this experimental room. Mm-hmm. And parent and infant are introduced into the experimental room. Parent and infant are alone. Parent does not participate while the infant explores. A stranger enters, talks with the parent, then approaches the infant, and the parent leaves inconspicuously. Now, here's what happens. What does the child's reaction to the parent leaving be? And what would be a normal reaction and what would be an abnormal reaction? And this is what they started looking. First, they thought about what they called secure attachment. Now, secure attachment is different than what you would believe. What was secure attachment, Linda?
The child who is securely attached to the mother was able to explore freely while the mother was present and engaged with strangers, but that he wasn't visibly upset when the mother departed and was happy to see the mother return. However, the child did not engage with a stranger if their mother is not in the room.
Now, that's an interesting perception right there. Think about being in love. Think about caring for someone very much. You have this great love for the person. The person is there in the room. Person goes out of the room. Do you immediately jump to your TV? Well, I'll turn on the TV. Well, according to this, what they called secure attachment, the child suspended while the parent was gone, but the attachment was to the parent. And according to what they called secure attachment, the child had no need to engage anything else while the parent was gone. And when the parent came back, the child reacted. It's like you're in a movie theater with somebody you love and they go to the bathroom. How are you during that movie? Do you sit around and start talking to everybody around you? Do you have a need for that? Do you need to get some popcorn right away? Are you okay until the person comes back? Secure attachment. Now they had a thing, they said, but that wasn't the majority of it. What is insecure or anxious, what they call anxious, resistant, insecure attachment?
Anxious, resistant attachment is when a child is anxious of exploring and of strangers, even when the mother is present. When the mother departs, the child is extremely distressed. The child becomes ambivalent when she returns. He seeks to remain close to the mother, but resentful and also resistant when the mother initiates the attention. When the child and the mother are reunited, the baby will also hit or push the mother when she approaches and fail to cling to her when she picks him up.
So imagine now you've got a boyfriend-girlfriend, right? Boyfriend-girlfriend, and they go out of town. And you're very nervous about their going out of town. And they go out of town, and you're very nervous about them going out of town. And when they get back, you're angry. You actually hit them. You say things. You're mean. They had to just go to the bathroom. You were just watching a movie. But you're angry at them when they come back. This is a style of what they call the anxious, resistant, insecure attachment. What's another form of attachment?
We have the disorganized and disoriented attachment. In that, we see that's a fourth category that was added by Ainsworth, where the child cries during the separation but avoids the mother when she returns, or may approach the mother and then freeze or fall to the floor. It's a disorientation, a confusion. The child is fearful as well as traumatized, so that there's an ambivalence that occurs. The child will also appear dazed or fail to really connect.
It's an interesting thing because there are children, there are adults I know who are disorganized. And almost every disorganized parent, child, person I know was a disorganized child. And this disorganized attachment, disorientation attachment, is a child that cannot stand separation. And they have very specific reactions that they do later in life to make sure they never go through this terror again. This is Armand DeMille with you with Linda Vanella. We're looking at attitudes of attachment, different ways that people are attached. Now, we're exploring the baby study, the baby protocol, because the baby protocol tells us a great deal about what happens later. You know, I mean, what happens later in life as we get to be grown-ups is what gets determined. What makes for love? What makes for attachment? What makes people attracted to each other? So what would you say about yourself? Would you say you're an attachment? You're a secure attached person? Would you say that you're an insecure attached person? Would you say you're a detached person? What kind are you? And that's what we're going to look at today. You're an anxious person. When my partner's away, I'm afraid he or she may become interested in someone else. So the jealous type. I often worry that my partner will stop loving me. So there's a lot of anxiety present. But anxiety alone is not enough of a criteria, because an anxious person can also be avoidant. And avoidant means you know you're going to leave. Avoidant means you know you're not going to get as close as the other person wants to get. Your partners often want you to be more intimate than you will feel comfortable being. You find it difficult to depend on romantic partners. You're an independent. But that's the way it is. That's the avoidant relationship. Now, you could be both anxious and avoidant, because that's exactly what's going on. You just don't trust. And so you're not getting close. Now, the secure type has supposedly little difficulty expressing my needs and wants to my partners, and sometimes people see you as boring because you create little drama in relationship. Not little meaning very little. You don't need drama. The other types, the anxious type and the avoidant type, there's always drama around. Well, so what kind do you think you are? Well, we did a survey, and almost everybody said, I'm the secure type. Everybody thought they were the secure type of individual, and it's the other person who is the insecure or avoidant type, not you. If only you had the right person, you would be as loving as the day is going. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Researchers have long observed that children have these distinct attachment styles. And more recently, they began to appreciate that the adults present the very same kind of attachment. So what about you? What do you think about your type?
Well, I'm thinking too, Armand, of what are the factors of, or why or how do people who are coming from a secure attachment would be attracted to or be in relationship with someone else who is coming from perhaps an avoidant or an anxious, insecure?
Well, that's kind of interesting, you know, because if you think about secure relationship types, like Connecticut types, like people who live in Connecticut, they're very secure. You know, they're very calm. Everything's okay. But there's something wrong with that that I think is not so secure. I think what happens is people get a little depressed behind the sameness of it. And they look for fire. They look for excitement. So if you get a relationship with somebody who's anxious and nervous, they present a higher level of anxiety. If you're, you know, sometimes it's better to crave a food, desire a food, than to have it. You know, so craving is it becomes a very nice thing, desiring, wanting, you know, yearning is a beautiful feeling, but you don't get that if you're a secure type. So secure types tend to stay in the same place. But I think what happens is they look for a way to excite themselves and to bring excitement to the table. And one of the ways of doing that is to be with somebody who's a little nutsy. You get with somebody who's a little nutsy, and they act a little nutsy, and they get a little crazy, and they bring drama into your life. And you go, oh, look at this. Look at what's happening. Look at this. They're having arguments with you about things. You said, no, you said, and there's blame and shame and all these other things. So different than the normal, boring one-to-one that so many people live with. However, I'm willing to say that I think that the secure types who are frail, who are vulnerable to forming the insecure relationships, were not very secure in the first place. Because it's nice to just stay in one place. If you're comfortable with it, there's some discomfort about it that makes you want to go to the outside, to love outside, you know, to feel a yearning outside. Now, maybe it's sexuality. Maybe just the nature of the human race is that you've got to be out there and multiply. And that, you know, if you're a male and you have sperm to spread, you're supposed to be feeling it and doing it. And things happen like that that drive you away, and it's looking at somebody who is youthful and vigorous and exciting and who's working in your backyard cleaning up your lawn, and you're a woman at home and you look at him and you feel things that you don't feel with your husband anymore, you know? Maybe it's nice to feel alive. So I think in our world today, Linda, people tend to get numb with sameness. And I wish we didn't, but I think we do. And therefore, I think we're attracted to the winds of excitement.
Then in that regard, Armand, can attachment styles change? So can you at one time seek that one person who is the same, that secure, that no drama relationship? And at another time or with another person, can you in fact be attracted to a different attachment style?
Well, see, everybody says they want the secure type. Everybody says it, especially after they've been wounded. If you've been through one of those relationships that are the anxious type or avoidance style, and you've had battle with that, and you've been bloodied and beaten, and your heart's been ripped out of your chest, stomped on, put into mincemeat, thrown through the grinder, made into a hamburger, then stuffed back in your chest, If that's happened to you, you feel rotten. And you turn around and you say, is there anything around here that's nice? And you meet somebody who's sweet and nice. And you say, security. I want that security. And that person offers you all the security in the world. And you find yourself falling asleep. And you wonder, where's my next hamburger helper? You know, where's the next person to liven me up again? So I think we do change our styles in reaction. For example, how often do you have to look at somebody and ask them about their past relationships and find out from them that their last five relationships all wanted more from them than they wanted to give? So if you ask a man, well, what happened to your last relationship? He said, well, my girlfriend wanted to see me every night, and I didn't want to see her every night. I wanted one night free. And what happened to the relationship before then? Well, she wanted us to move, and I didn't want to move. I wanted to stay. And then in each relationship, he was being pulled on. You could tell, you could answer your question, this is an avoidant type of person. Now, what do you say to yourself? Well, I'm going to be the magic bullet. I'm going to be the one. No, if you're really lucky, you get to a point in life where you both have burned out on your avoidant behaviors. You've burned it out and you find somebody who is also burned out, but they're ready to go to war. And the two of you get together and you go to war on each other. And you have the normal fights and the normal screaming, but you have consciousness. And you work it through. And you say, okay, yeah, I know this is silly, but let's go for it anyway. So if you're really lucky, by the time you get to a certain point, maybe, if you're fortunate, the two people will be at the same time of exhaustion and ready to change for a little while. And then as soon as you get the sameness, you're going to find one person or another is going to create a drama. But if you can work with it, the two of you can push it almost anywhere. This is Armand DeMille with you with Linda Vanella.
I have another question too, Armand, with all of this attachment and relationships, and I also look at today's technology and what's that effect with cell phones and texting, and how does that affect our attachments and our relationships?
It's really strange. I spoke to somebody earlier today, good friend of mine, who said she's got a new relationship. And she's with a man who is clearly bipolar, means manic depressive, bipolar 2, which is a kind of benign form of bipolarity, meaning that he's got a lot of manic energy. But it's a little on the wacky side. But these are very dynamic people. He texts her every chance he can. Her text messaging, he wants to know where she is at every second. The other day she was in a movie, and he texted her, and he got angry at her. Why weren't you answering your text? A day before that, she was at a funeral, and he was angry at her for not answering her text because she was at a funeral. His attachment became so much so that she would respond to him and he would respond to her and they would spend the whole day thumbs on, you know? And then what would eventually happen is they would crawl into each other's mind. Now it was no longer just a text message. It was your other self. It was like, here it goes, now it goes back. And here it goes, and now it goes back. I don't know, Linda, have you ever had, I have never had a text relationship where it went back and forth for any reason, but you've got children. And I know there must have been times, especially like when your daughter was giving birth or something like that, that texting was a big deal back and forth. Have you been through that?
For sure, yes. And I find that it could be extremely helpful and help me to connect with my adult children when they're across the other side of the world, traveling or in different places where we don't have access to phones from different time zones or whatever. And I think that it has really helped us to have a closeness that we have been able to perpetuate through the technology. But what I'm concerned about is how does it affect romantic relationships when you speak of, you know, that texting and getting into each other's head and soul. Do we really do that, or do we form another kind of relationship that is different? Maybe not better or worse, but different.
Well, it seems like a different type. Seems like a different type of love when you're doing it through text. You know what I mean? It's like, let me give you another example of it is emails. I keep promising myself I'll never write another email. I keep promising myself. Because the difference between email that I write and any communication other than that that I have is my voice, my tenderness, my caring. It's not there. I'm a one-finger typist. I don't put all of my caring and feeling into the letter that I send. And I'm always getting back letters from people who are shocked by what I'm sending. Because I think I'm just writing the facts. But they don't know. It's like, but where's Armand in this? So I'm lousy at it. And I notice that most people are. There's not affection. There's not caring. There may be sex. There may be love words. There may be all kinds of things. But a definite caring is missing. A loving is missing. And for me. Now, that's for most people out there. This is a level of where their relationships are now. And people are morphing into these other kind of people. Other kind of romantic relationships. Which include texting and Facebooking and link-a-dinking and all the other things that people are doing to kind of keep up with each other. But it's a funny thing. There used to be the mystery of where are you now? What is he thinking? You know, where is she? And you don't have mystery anymore because you have a cell phone. You can connect with them. Although I saw a woman earlier today who said, oh, that's my boyfriend. He's calling me. He thinks I'm still in Florida. He thinks I'm still out of town. And she was standing in my office. And I'm thinking to myself, so you have a boyfriend who follows you around, but you let him think you're in other cities. And he wouldn't know the difference. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella. Basically, secure people feel comfortable with intimacy and are usually warm and loving. Anxious people crave intimacy, are often preoccupied with their relationships, and tend to worry about their partner's ability to love them back. Avoidant people equate intimacy with a loss of independence and constantly try to minimize closeness. I know one woman who's avoidant, and she is... She goes into relationships and she's a little bit of a fish, a cold fish. She doesn't have the attachments. So she's a scientist, you know, and she says, well, you know, it's all hormones, it's all chemistry. She just avoids the risk of intimacy and the risk of pain.
How, Armand, do we get some control over our attachment style? So the way that you just described a woman who enters and she's a bit of a fish, so that you would see...
By that I mean cold fish doesn't want to feel anything emotionally.
Exactly. So she's an avoidant, I would assume.
Yes.
So then how could such a person get some control over an attachment?
Well, maybe she shouldn't. Maybe that's the way it is. Maybe it takes all three kinds, you know. Maybe we've got to have the three sorts and we mix between them, because maybe if you have the nervous type and they're going after the avoidant type, maybe it combines together to form some kind of a society. You know, like we need all different kinds in the tribe. We need the warriors who sit on the outside of the mountain places and they're looking and making sure there's no danger. And then we need the nesters who are inside the cave cooking the food. Then we need the hunters who are running out and finding the food and bringing it back. So we need all types. So I don't know if there's a way of bringing it into a psychologically harmonious, perfect balance. Because with all of these missing, if you had a different style and it was all harmonious and all secure, I think it would be kind of stagnant. I was going to say boring, but I mean stagnant. And I think the human being is a growing entity. I think we're all growing. And I think we want to grow and we want to be a part of something different, something alive, something growing. This is Armand DeMille with you. We're going to take your telephone calls about attachment and separation and your feeling about it at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. Let me give you the attachment quiz. Number one, I find it relatively easy to get close to others, and I'm comfortable depending on them and having them depend on me. I don't worry about being abandoned, or I don't worry about when somebody gets too close to me. Can you say that about yourself? Almost everybody said, yeah, but it's not true. Here's the other type. I'm somewhat uncomfortable being close to others. I find it difficult to trust them completely, difficult to allow myself to depend on them. I'm nervous when anyone gets too close, and often romantic partners want me to be more intimate than I feel comfortable being. Now that's the avoidant style. And the third, I find that others are reluctant to get as close as I would like. I often worry that my partner doesn't really love me or won't want to stay with me. I want to merge completely with another person, and this desire sometimes scares people away. I love you so much, and it frightens them. This is the anxious style. So these are the three styles: observable in childhood, observable in infancy, and very observable in adulthood. It surprises me that salesmen don't spot this, look for it, and then sell accordingly. You know, I hope not too many of them listen to The Positive Mind if they're selling not good stuff. You know what I mean? 212-209-2900 is our number. Today, for Michael G. Haskins, we're going to play you an extra little piece of music, something special. And we're also going to be taking your calls, and we'll also be taking another break. No, we'll just take a break just around 1:30. Numerous studies show that once we become attached to someone, the two of us form one psychological, physiological unit. Our partners regulate our heart rate, our blood pressure, our breathing rate, and the levels of hormones in our blood. Everything changes. Two do become one. In many ways, dependence is a fact. It's not a choice. It's not a preference. It is a fact. Does that mean that we'd be happy in a relationship we need to be joined with our partner at the hip or give up other aspects of our life? Paradoxically, the opposite is true. The ability to step into a world on our own often stems from the knowledge that there is someone beside us with whom we can rely. If we had to describe the science of adult attachment in one sentence, it would be, if you want to take the road to independence and happiness, first find the right partner to depend on, and then travel down that road together. We will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friend, and we'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back. a little John Coltrane there with Thelonious Monk. I'll play a little more for that view later. I used to sit at the feet of Roy Haynes, who was the drummer, when this group would get on the stage at the Five Spot Cafe. And I was a kid, but I'd open my eyes and boy, I was in a world of jazz. And was I attached? I became jazz itself. I listened, and it wasn't that it was so spectacular. It was like it just was. Do you feel attached to things that way? You could be attached to your art. You could be attached to things. Attaching to things is really beautiful. Attaching to people is a disaster. It's so painful. It hurts so much. There's so many pitfalls. Everybody talks about the beauty of love. There's 10 times as many books written about the pain of love. I had an expression once called finding a plus for your minus. You go through life and there's a certain time in your life when you feel like you're lacking something. You could be missing energy, you could be missing intention, you could be missing sexuality, you could be missing something. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes along who says, hey, I see that gap, I'll fill that. And you say, I fell in love. I found a plus for your minus, for my minus. You know, there are times you could meet somebody and then you could just like kiss right on that spot. And you could have one of those long kisses that say, oh my God, did I meet you? Am I lucky? And you could just, you know, it was like finding a plus for your minus. Perfect. Right there. Right at that moment. All the stuff washes away. Unfortunately, it does tend to come back. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. You know, when we were kids, most of us didn't have secure attachment. And the result of that is we don't know how to do it later on. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Herb.
Hello, New Herb. York.
Yeah, a great show. I love
Thank you,
your,
Herb.
I like your topic. You know, I'm one of these people who has terrific dependent attachments. And I'm 77 now. And maybe you could psychoanalyze me a little bit, because we were always too poor for me to get any kind of a diagnosis.
Yeah, too poor for a diagnosis.
Yeah,
I like that.
I ain't that
much
better.
That's a cute expression.
Yeah, but a little stuff there. I remember my mother and me walking, and I sort of like wanted to walk at my own pace when I was very, very little, like 4 or 5. And you know, I'd sort of get angry at her, you know. So, I want to be dependent, you know. And then she would, like, hide on me, and I would be all, you know, anxious, you know. Then when she finally showed up, I would get mad at her. I would be real angry.
Exactly what we were talking about.
I wanted to hit her, yeah.
Right, right.
You know, and now the other thing I remember, I'm sort of like an addict, you know, and I did everything. The Valium, booze, cigarettes, now I'm off, all that stuff. Now I got coffee. So, anyway, my mind is cleared up and is quiet enough now for me to get recall from my early childhood, which I could never remember. I don't know how people could remember early childhood experiences. And I remember my mother used to have to wash my hair. I'm not a big guy for taking showers or keeping that clean, squeaky clean. So she used in a sink, you know. You used to have to stand up on something. And she'd wash my hair, and it felt so good, you know, invigorating. But then when I was finally out of that, it felt like 20 pounds was off my head and shoulders.
Sure.
You know?
Do you ever get that? Let me ask you, Herb, since we have to take some other callers, do you ever have anybody wash your hair in a sink nowadays?
No.
What about when you go to...
Me and my wife take showers together.
Bob, why don't you have her wash your head in the sink? Tell her to get a nice big quart plastic cup. Right? Put your head over the sink. Let her wash your hair.
Yeah, I'm 77. I don't have much hair anymore.
That's all right. She can wash it. It'll feel the same. It will feel just like the same. Ask her to do it for you. Would you, Herb?
All right.
All right. Tell us. Send her a message from me. wash Herb's head in the sink and let him feel like he just dropped 25.
I already told her she's a replacement for my mother.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. I recommend that to everybody. Get somebody to wash your hair. You know, not a bad idea. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm Perry.
Hello, Perry.
From Brooklyn. Yeah, I was listening to your the different ones, and when you're explaining some of them, I'm not sure you really talked a lot about the disorganized personality type, which I think I might have. Because as a child, I remember, apart from being called Mommy's Apron, you know, if she went out the house, I would get so disorganized. There was a time I snorted water up my nose, and, you know, I was hurt by doing that. But
sure. That's
how angry I got when, you know, she left the house. So I think I have a mix of some sort of, avoidant and then disorganized.
Yes, and that's a very common thing, the mixture of the two. You could do a little research on that, too, because there's a woman named Mary Main, M-A-I-N, did some research on the disorganized, disoriented attachment type. And they found that the mothers of these children themselves had suffered major losses or other trauma shortly before or after the birth of the infant, and that they were depressed. Was your mother depressed?
I'm not sure about that.
And was there any alcohol in the family?
No, the only thing I know is where I was born, it was a kind of country where they wrapped me up, and when they didn't wash me, and when they gave me to her, she was, like, disappointed with it.
Wow, and you could remember that disappointment. And you remember that disappointment.
Yeah, no, that's when I was born, but she always says it that, you know, she was very, you know, like, almost disgusted or the way they hadn't, you know, bad me, and they just gave me to her at that point, but I don't know.
Well, how do you feel about yourself nowadays? How do you feel about your physical self? Do you feel
Right.
Do you feel if you show your naked body to somebody you love that they feel disgust with you, or do you feel that they could love you?
No. The only problems that I have is the disorganization in relationships, like, you know, getting really anxious if the person, you know, goes away or something.
Sure. And what eventually happens, Perry, is that you will eventually find yourself finding a relationship where you feel that security set in, and it changes over time. And I know you feel the panic of it, but as long as you're aware of it, saying, okay, now here it is, the disorganized self, here I am. I'm aware of what I'm doing. I'm aware of my nervousness. And you don't believe it. You know that it's happening, but you don't believe the facts are real. They're not leaving you. They're not disappearing from you. They're not breaking away from you. But you know it's your nervousness. And the more you're aware of that, the better you get at it.
All right.
I want to thank you very much for calling in, Barry.
Thank you, Amanda Mel.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Lynn.
Hello, Lynn.
And I really appreciate what you were talking about, and I connect it most in terms of my therapist and myself.
That's another relationship that's very important.
Yeah. So I'm both anxious and avoidance, both those two. I have a strong need to want to be connected to people, but if they get, you know, but if they're really present, then I need to back away. So what's happening right now with this therapist is that I discovered that when she's away lately, I do much better. You know, I feel better. I'm able to handle things better. And then when she's back, I become more anxious and more needy and unsure of myself.
Mm.
And it's happened several times. And then I realized that, you know, I'm an older person, so I've had other therapists, and I've had this experience before with other therapists as well, that, you know, so that...
So it's kind of a dependency relationship. What you're saying is the following. When you're here, I need to need you, and I find a way to need you by being more neurotic. When you're around and when you're gone, I know I have to take care of myself.
Right, and it's not only that, but I realize that I can.
Yeah.
I don't always, you know, when in this case it's she, but when she's present, I don't have the sense that I could process things or I could take care of myself. I don't have it. I just am very anxious.
Well, you know what I'm willing to bet, Lynn?
Yeah.
That you've been getting better at it. That you're not the same as you used to be years ago. That you're actually improving in that direction. Because it sounds to me like you're not stagnant or stuck. It sounds like you're growing. And that it'll be less and less time when you're going to be feeling the kind of panic. Because there's a part of you that does it for a while, and then you learn about it, and you observe it. And the more you observe it, the less you feel fall prey to it. So it sounds like to me like you're growing and you keep changing.
It feels very nice. But the reason why it struck me when I was listening to this is that she now wants me to talk about the possibility of leaving therapy because I would get very angry and think she didn't understand this and she didn't understand this and whatever. And then all of a sudden when you talked about this, I realized it's not, you know, there's a totally different way of looking at it from the way that she was thinking or I was thinking about, you know, is it time to leave this therapist? It's because it's really this dynamic that's taking place. And I don't know that I could stay in therapy and also feel I can handle things. I don't know that yet.
Well, that's what you've got to learn, you see.
Right.
So that's why you wanted to stick around for this.
Yeah, so I was just so struck by what you said, because all of a sudden I saw... You know, sort in a different light.
Well, good, Lynn. You could actually, you know, remember, you could always go to the archives of thepositivemind.com and you could direct your therapist to him and say, listen to this. And I think I'm a part of it and she'll probably enjoy it as well.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Sure, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, another fascinating show of yours.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You know, in regard to what you said about a plus filling a minus,
mm-hmm.
3 years ago I was at a very sort of low point in my life, and I met this woman, and I fell in love with her. You know, the first day I met her, completely gone.
Absolutely gonzo.
Sunk.
100% plus for your minus.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, I saw her regularly, and... miracle of miracle, after about 2 months, she fell in love with me. And for a year, it was bliss. And then she had the colossal nerve to fall out of love with me,
mm-hmm.
and didn't know how to tell me, and so just sort of avoided me. And I had all of this, I was in despair, and I had all this anger toward her, and I found... I mean, now I can look back and see I was trying to punish her for, you know, for this colossal sin of not loving me anymore. And so now we're trying to be friends, and it's difficult because...
It is very difficult because the needs are there, you know, and you're also angry. Also angry that she left.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very difficult thing to find the friendship. Sometimes you need the separation to find the friendship. You know, you got to completely let go to find the friendship. But maybe, let's also keep in mind, what's your name?
Ronald.
Ronald, let's also keep in mind, maybe you only wanted this for a year. You know, Ronald, maybe on your side...
No, I asked you to marry me.
I know, but that doesn't mean anything. People very often do that, and they don't mean it. Because you would have asked her to marry you if you knew she was going to say no. See, you were trying to attach, and she was trying to avoid.
Yeah.
So it was just a drama. Neither one of you were really secure. But it was just one of those things. You know, one of those dramas in life. And if only there was a way to take that precious year and encapsulate it, save it as a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the pain does undo it.
But how does a person go from... I mean, the thing that I can't comprehend... I mean, I was kind and generous and giving, and I was there whenever she needed me. But how does a person go from the point where they love you to where now she doesn't even like me?
Yeah, no, I understand, because she turned off. The switch goes off, and when that switch goes off, and you could find out if you check her history that this has happened to her many times before. When the switch goes off, the switch goes off.
Yeah.
And she has no way back to her heart until you disappear.
Yeah.
But the more you search after her, the more the switch stays off. You see? It doesn't do you any good.
So I shouldn't try to be friends?
Chasing it is not going to get it for you. You know, you go on, you live your life, you go find somebody else and to be with, and you'll find eventually that door will open up again.
Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure, Ronald. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I actually have a similar situation, I think, to the last caller. I'm just getting out of a 4-year relationship.
Wow.
And
That's tough.
Yeah, my heart's about to explode.
Yeah, I could hear.
But it's this relationship before that, it followed almost the exact same pattern where, you know, we fall in love. And for the first half of the relationship, she's much more attached than I am, and it maybe even scares me a little, and I probably push her away. And then maybe towards the second half of the relationship, my pushing away seems to work, and then I don't want that, but then it's too late. And then, you know, once it's kind of over, that's when I'm heartbroken, and I realize, you know, I guess you don't know what you have until it's gone, type thing.
Well, you probably don't know what you had, even if it's still there.
You
know what I mean? It's very hard to figure these things out. Number one, rule number one, it's very hard to be grown up. Mm-hmm. So we love as children, and we are children going through dramas of childhood, and we're trying to grow up. What's your name, by the way?
Scott.
Scott. So, you know, Scott, I mean, you're trying your very best, and trying to find a partner and trying to love. It's trying to fill that missing hole that you had for so long before this. And it happened in a previous relationship. Mm-hmm. It's rough. And I'm sorry you're going through such a broken heart, because I could hear you practically going to crack in half, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people understand the level of pain that they go through when they go through this kind of a thing, because the separation goes from being one to becoming two again. And it's like you're splitting in half. So I think the following takes place. I think you have to grieve. And I think in each relationship that it ends, you have to really allow yourself the grieving process. And that includes all the things that you've done, but they do include both the anger and the tears.
Both right now.
Yeah, both the rage and your tears. And it's an entry point. It's an entry point to your own soul. Do you have a therapist around?
I actually saw someone from your office the last time, and it really helped a lot. But
may not be such a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
You know, because you may step up to another place.
I could at least take myself out of it now, where I don't stay in the, you know, obsessively. Like, I could pull myself out, but then
amazing. You mean, you've changed in that regard? You're no longer just obsessing? You could actually step away from it?
Yeah, like, I'll let myself cry, and I'll, you know, my heart feels like it's going to explode through my whole body, but then I'm actually able to take a breath and do something productive. You know, like, I instinctively want to break something or, you know, something like that, but then I take a breath, and I could actually go and, you know, organize something. Or right now I'm actually going through all of her stuff to try to pack it up so she can come pick it up.
Or you
could
just...
You know, I could pull myself out of it sometimes. You know, it doesn't make it that much easier, but it's certainly better than the last time.
Better than the last time. Scott, each step you take is one step towards freedom. Somewhere down the line here, you'll get it right.
Thank you.
It'll take some time. Any way I could help you, let me know.
Thank you.
Sure.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's a funny thing about love, isn't it? Funny thing about love is it's such a grand experience. So grand. But the consequences, the costs, the hurt, the pain. My gosh, some people just say, like the avoidant, they just say, not me, fella. I ain't going to go there. I don't want to have that. I'm ready to fly. I'm ready to get out of here. I'm not going to get that close. I'm not going to love anybody. I'm not going to have them love me. Others say I couldn't live without it. It is my glue. It's my essence. And somewhere along life, we try to find a place where we find a perfect balance. And when we find the balance of it, you know, eventually we find a real partner. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. It's been a pleasure being with you Tuesday and Wednesday. I'll post some shows on Facebook, but do pay attention to thepositivemind.com, the Facebook page, and you'll have more programs than you can handle. I'll be back with you soon, my friends. Back to Thelonious Monk. And Well, You Needn't. That was the name of it.